It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Thanks for listening over the air or via our free app for your iPhone or your Android phone. Just go to the store, the app store there, and download the free KTRS app, and you can listen to us in digital quality anywhere you like. I am Paul Harris. Ian Geis and Dan Strass are here with me in the studio, and normally I would turn to my right here and see Colin Jeffrey, our news director, but he is he's out today, apparently auditioning to be Kelly Ripa's new partner on Live with Kelly and Colin.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, you know, Michael Strahan announced a couple of days ago he was going to Good Morning America, and so...
He's Colin at the dentist, getting his teeth separated?
Yeah. He can spit between them.
Colin, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
Where are you, actually? I know you're not actually auditioning for the Kelly Ripa gig.
I wish. I'm in Chicago.
Because you have tickets for Game 6 tomorrow night.
Game 6, exactly. Yeah, I planned ahead. No, I wish.
You knew that the Blues would lose in double overtime in Game 5, and you planned ahead and got yourself tickets for tomorrow night. Nicely done.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing seeing that game in Chicago. Everyone was so happy. So, well.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can close it out.
You just up there visiting family, or?
Yeah, I've got friends up here.
Nice, nice. All right, well, we've got showbiz stuff to do in this hour, and there are three movies opening in St. Louis today. I have two of them. You have one of them, and I'll let you go because it's going to be the biggest one. But before we get to these three movies, tell me about how surprised you were at the enormous success that The Jungle Book had at the box office last weekend.
Well, I think people agreed with the critics by and large, and I finished watching it, and wow, I was thoroughly impressed with that movie. And yeah, I'm happy to see that. That's very good news for them to see a live action remake do so well. And this has been really popular. I mean, Maleficent was hugely popular. Cinderella, they just did last year, was another really popular movie. So people seem to be liking the idea of these live action remakes. And not only that, the quality of the CGI and everything in The Jungle Book was really good. So, you know, good news, I think, because if you haven't seen it, Dan, I think, said he's maybe going to the drive-in to see it.
Yeah.
I would recommend checking it out.
Even if you don't have kids to take?
Absolutely. This is just a good movie. If you're nostalgic for the Disney version, this will satisfy that. And if you're not super familiar with Jungle Book, this is a great way to be introduced.
Is it a musical?
It's got a few songs in it. I think it has three songs through the movie, and they're the songs you'd kind of expect, the biggest hits, but it's not a musical. There's just songs in it, and Jon Favreau directed it, and he might be one of these underrated directors that just makes a lot of fun movies that are good.
Frank saw it and said he recommends it to anyone. Even if you don't have kids, go see it.
Wow.
He loved it. Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll check it out this weekend. It did like $100 million last weekend, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it ended up globally closer to $200 million.
Wow.
It was a very big movie, yeah.
Wow. So that is probably the film to beat this weekend. And is the movie that you're going to review for us, The Huntsman, Winter's War, going to come close?
I hope not. But it might, just because it's got a lot of star power in it. This has Chris Hemsworth, Jessica Chastain, Charlize Theron, someone else.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's got a very good cast. It's missing notably Kristen Stewart, and we'll come back to that, because this is sort of a sequel and prequel all in one to Snow White and the Huntsman that came out a few years back, 3 or 4 years back. And that was sort of a more adult retelling of Snow White and a story there. And this starts off before that movie and then moves after that movie, and it bounces in timelines and sort of tries to tell us two stories. And we've talked about this, Paul. When they try to do too many things, they don't do them well. And that's what happens here. If you're... Wow, it's really difficult if you're not familiar with the Snow White story, because this revolves around why the Queen and Snow White became so angry. And it tries to add this lore that, really, frankly, you don't need.
Well, it's that damn mirror telling her that she's not the most attractive of them all.
Yeah.
Exactly. But why is the mirror? Why do all these things happen? Why is she frustrated like this? And any movie that's about, like, a child's story that involves infanticide, which this does, is just, it's too heavy. Like, that's too heavy of a plot. And I just... I'm going to, I can't even give you a good description of what happens in the plot other than Chris Hemsworth returns as the huntsman from the first movie, and it's an odd love triangle and unrequited love, and it's just, it's muddled, and I just don't understand why they made this at all, other than Chris Hemsworth and Charlize Theron are both nice to look at, I guess.
Yeah.
It's bad when the best thing you can say about the movie is the costumes are great. And the costumes are great in this.
Yeah, especially in a special effects movie. Ooh, the costumes were good.
Yeah. They're almost so good that they're overdone. Like, it distracts from the movie. That in some cases, especially with... Emily Blunt, that's the other. She's sister to Charlize Theron. The battling queens, I guess. And it's distracting when their costumes are better than the performances. Mm. So, just kind of a frustrating movie, all told. And
give it a 0 to 10 rating. What do you think?
Well, what I'm going to say before that, actually, is what's odd is when the story behind the making of the first movie is more interesting than the second movie. And the reason I say that is Kristen Stewart actually had an affair with the director of the first one. You may remember this. This is what broke up she and Robert Pattinson. She was hooking up with the director. And that's more interesting than the story in the second movie.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a 2.5 out of 10, really, at best. And I wouldn't recommend going to see it. It's just, it's overdone. There's neat battle scenes, but it's not worth it.
Did you like the first one?
Not particularly. And so this had a lot of work to do to win me over, and it was, but the first one was at least popcorn fun at times. This was just too much.
Well, it obviously did well enough and impressed enough people that they said, we got to make a sequel.
Yes, but the problem was they didn't calculate this right. Chris Hemsworth in 2012, when they signed him on to make the movie, was a nobody. He was not the superstar that he is today. And so now they've got this enormous cast. And they were originally, the original script was going to have Kristen Stewart in it, but they couldn't afford her. So they had to write her out, essentially, early in the drafting process of this. So they come in the idea with, hey, let's do a sequel. And then they say, oh, we can't afford this actress. So now they try to make a sequel around that hole. I mean, it would be like trying to make Ghostbusters 2, except it's up, you know, we can't get Dan Aykroyd back. You can't write around that. It's foolish. So, just ill-conceived from the get-go. And, no, go see Jungle Book this weekend, or one of the movies Paul's going to review.
Okay, so The Huntsman, Winter's War, gets a 2.5 from Colin. Now, as I mentioned, I have two other movies that are opening in St. Louis today. These are not going to be on a ton of screens. They're kind of art house movies. I have one that's very good and one that's very bad. Which one do you want to hear?
Oh, the bad one.
Okay. That would be Don Cheadle's movie about Miles Davis. St. Louis Walk of Fame guy who went on to become probably the most famous trumpeter in history. The movie is called Miles Ahead, and I can best sum it up by telling you this is another depressing biopic about a tortured musical genius. It's also obviously a vanity movie because Don Cheadle not only plays Miles Davis, and they have him looking like Miles Davis actually did in real life, but he also co-wrote and directed the movie. And it takes place at a time in the late 70s when Miles Davis had stopped recording music. Now, I have to admit here, I've never really been a Miles Davis fan. I don't like that kind of jazz. It's just, you know, too avant-garde for me. But I understand from people who do know that kind of jazz that he was considered a genius of the form. You don't see anything about that in this movie. You never learn why Miles Davis was considered that great. Instead, you get a story that involves a white Rolling Stone reporter, played by Ewan McGregor, who's kind of along for the ride, but he adds nothing to our knowledge of Miles Davis. You get car chases and gunfights, which make Miles Davis come off more like a gangster drug addict. You get battles with his record company, but we never really understand why he's battling them. There are some flashbacks to Davis's really successful years in the 50s and 60s, but not enough of those. The story is concentrated on these years in the late 70s when he was, you know, an addict and involved in weird stories like this one, which is supposedly a real life story. They didn't make this thing up, but they chose the wrong part of this guy's life to tell. it would be like going to the Johnny Cash movie and only seeing the years about when he was not successful, or going to see the Ray Charles movie, and it's all about him as a drug addict, but nothing about why he was considered a musical genius. At least those movies showed Jamie Foxx and Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash, showed them performing and singing the songs that we know from Ray Charles and Johnny Cash to be great songs, and how they developed those songs and the backstory behind those songs. There is none of that in this movie. There is nothing to relate to. This is going to be on my worst movies of the year list. I give it a 2 out of 10. It's called Miles Oh, wow. Ahead. I would be surprised if this plays in town for more than a week. It is really, really depressingly bad. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got a movie about another guy who had a huge impact on music. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Elvis Presley.
Not familiar.
Well, you think you know everything about Elvis, but what you may not know is the story that's told in this movie, Elvis and Nixon. And you think, Elvis Presley and Richard Nixon? How is that a movie? How is that a story? It's actually a true story. It's not a documentary. In the movie, Elvis is played by Michael Shannon. Not the Mike Shannon from the Cardinals broadcast, but Michael Shannon, who last year was in a movie you recommended to me that I liked a lot called 99 Homes.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good. And Richard Nixon is played by Kevin Spacey. It's a little bit weird because lately we know Kevin Spacey for playing President Frank Underwood in the Netflix series House of Cards. Well, here he plays Nixon, and I will give him credit for one. Well, I like the movie, but one of the things that I give Kevin Spacey credit for is he's not doing an impression of everybody who's ever done an impression of Richard Nixon, which I think goes back to, do you remember an impressionist named David Fry?
Yes.
Who was popular in the 60s and early 70s when Nixon was in office.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who did the "I am not a crook" Nixon with the two fingers on each hand held, you know, in the victory pose and all that sort of stuff. He defined Richard Nixon in much the same way that Dana Carvey defined the George Bush, George H.W. Bush thing, and then Will Ferrell did the George W. Bush, you know.
Yeah.
And Phil Hartman was the best Bill Clinton, and everybody who's done Clinton is doing an impression of Phil Hartman.
Yes.
In this one, to his credit, Kevin Spacey is not imitating David Fry's imitation of Richard Nixon. He does a very good job, and you never see him as President Frank Underwood. Maybe you do for a minute or so, because that might be what you're thinking about. But when you see him in the movie, it's not. So that's good. Here's the story behind this. In 1970, December 21st, 1970, Elvis Presley got it into his mind that he wanted to go to Washington and meet the president and make a proposal to him. Nobody in the Elvis organization contacted the White House ahead of time because they didn't know about this. He got his friend Jerry Schilling, and they got on a plane, and they flew to Washington on an American Airlines flight.
Uh-oh.
Colin, are you still there?
I think we lost him.
Yeah. All right. Well, he'll call back. So Elvis and Jerry Schilling fly across the country on an American Airlines flight. And on that flight, Elvis takes out American Airlines stationery, which they have, which they had on planes in those days. Like I said, this is a long time ago. This is 45 years ago we're talking about. And on the plane, he writes a 6-page letter to President Nixon. Elvis writes in the letter about what he considered the moral decline of the country. He was upset with the Vietnam War protests. He was upset with hippies. He was upset with Black Panthers, and on and on and on. And he wrote in his letter, this is true, quote, "I have done an in-depth study of drug abuse and communist brainwashing techniques, and I'm right in the middle of the whole thing where I can and will do the most good. I am glad to help just so long as it is kept very private," unquote. So they get to Washington, D.C., they check into the hotel, and Elvis and his buddy Jerry go to the northwest gate of the White House, and, you know, the Secret Service guard there meets him. "Yes, sir, can I help you?" They think he's an Elvis impersonator. Why would the real Elvis just walk up to the northwest gate of the White House? But they realize very quickly this is really Elvis, and he hands him that, and he says, "I'd like a meeting with the president." And they had to explain to him, you don't just walk up to the White House and get a meeting with the president, even if you're Elvis freaking Presley. So then word gets into the White House and to some of Nixon's cronies, like Bob Haldeman, who says, no, are you kidding? And Eagle Crow, Bud Eagle Crow was another guy who worked there. And some of the other people, they try to figure out how they can make this work. They think it would be good for Nixon to meet with Elvis because it would be good for his image. And they go to Nixon with the idea, and he says, absolutely not. I am not meeting with Elvis Presley. Now, you got to remember that Richard Nixon, you know, when he was vice president in the 50s under Eisenhower, was a guy who was appalled by the oncoming onslaught of rock and roll. He was not a rock and roller in any way. And so the idea of meeting the king of rock and roll was ridiculous to him, and he said no. But Elvis's people knew that Nixon had daughters, one of whom was Trisha Nixon, who was 20 years old, and guess who her favorite rock star was? Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. And so she effectively became the most powerful person in the world because she ordered her father to let Elvis come for a meeting, and you better get his autograph. And this is all played out in the movie. And Elvis gets to go to the White House, and he shows up with a gift for the president, which the Secret Service is not all that thrilled about. It's a gun with ammunition. And he also is packing. He's got guns on him, and Jerry Schilling has guns on him, and the Secret Service say, we don't allow guns in the White House, Mr. Presley. Well, I carry them wherever I go, you know. I'm not going to do an invitation. If I were to do an invitation of Steve of Elvis Presley, it would be my invitation of Steve Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Doing
yeah.
his Elvis tribute show. So yeah. I'm not going to do that.
I carry my guns with me everywhere I go, man.
So Elvis goes in, and he actually gets this meeting and explains that he wants to be an undercover agent at large for the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, which did exist in those days. And Nixon is stunned by this. He says, undercover? And Elvis explains, well, yes, you may know I've done a couple of dozen movies, so I'm now an expert in costumes and disguises. Again, this all really happened, but they're playing it out in the movie, and it's hysterical. Elvis also wanted a badge, a federal badge that he actually did get, and the Secret Service is not thrilled with any of this. Nixon, who was at first opposed to it, kind of comes to like him. At first, Elvis says, no pictures, but then Nixon says, well, we'll give you the badge if I can get the autograph for my daughter and a picture. And so they took a picture that day. It's Nixon wearing the most conservative gray suit with the American flag pin in the lapel, shaking hands with Elvis Presley in a pair of velvet bell-bottoms with a velvet cape and a belt buckle the size of Oklahoma. That picture is in the National Archives. It is the most requested photo in the history of the National Archives. To this day, when people go visit there, that's the picture they want a copy of. This movie is so entertaining. Because everything I told you is true and is incorporated into the movie, and so much else is in there. I really enjoyed this movie. Elvis and Nixon is the title. Again, it's got Michael Shannon as Elvis and Kevin Spacey as Nixon. It also has Colin Hanks, Johnny Knoxville.
Now,
from Jackass, he's in there as one of Elvis's guys. Tate Donovan is in there. There are a few other people who you might recognize. I'm giving this thing an 8 out of 10.
Wow! Is this considered a comedy?
Or? Yes.
Okay.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a comedy.
Okay.
Because the situation. I mean, what I just described to you, you were laughing as I was describing.
I know.
So imagine seeing that acted out.
Yeah.
On the screen.
Wow.
It is one of the funniest movies I've seen this year, and it would go perfectly on a double bill with a movie I've talked about before, which was simply called Dick. You remember this movie, Colin?
Oh yeah, The Interns. Kirsten Dunst was it, or who was it?
And Michelle Williams.
Mm-hmm.
1999 movie. They were teenage girls who got internships at the White House right at the time of Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
And in that one, Dan Hedaya plays Nixon, and he is doing kind of a David Fry impression. Will Ferrell was in there as Bob Woodward. Terry Gard, Dave Foley, Anna Gasteyer, Harry Shearer, Ryan Reynolds, a very young Ryan Reynolds was in that movie. That's one you can get on Netflix. It's called Dick. Either before or after you see Elvis and Nixon, I'm recommending you see both of these movies because they're both very, very funny about a very serious time in American history. But that day, December 21st, 1970, when Elvis shows up at the White House gate, the look on the Secret Service guy's face is an absolute classic. It may be the best scene I've seen in anything this year. It is so good.
Wow.
It is not going to play in a ton of movie theaters. Mm-hmm. It might just be like a Tivoli or a Plaza Frontenac. But go watch this movie. And particularly if you're into Elvis at all, go see this movie. I think a lot of people are going to have their minds changed about Elvis Presley because they may have thought of him as this cool, hip rock and roller. And in the movie, he comes off as the squarest, most conservative person. After all, you know, 1970, that's who you were if you were worried about communists and hippies and, mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. The funny thing to me is he wants to go undercover in the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. And what did Elvis die of? Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs.
Oh, yeah. But this is a completely true story because I remember when all that came out about Elvis wanting to go...
undercover.
Part of the FBI and stuff.
Everywhere he goes in the movie, people go, is that? I mean, even when he's not wearing the velvet bell bottoms and the cape, everybody recognizes that that's Elvis Presley. How is he going to pull off the undercover thing?
My code name will be Hound Dog.
No one will ever guess that, Elvis.
No.
That's good. Maybe you could change your name to Presley Elvis. No one would figure that out. Oh, man. It's a good one, Colin. When you come back into town, you have to check it out.
I will. That sounds great.
Any other showbiz stuff we have to mention?
Nothing real big other than I happen to see this. We've been talking about the shrinking catalog of Netflix lately, how they're focusing more and more on new products, original television.
Yeah.
If you are a fan of movies and need to see the most streaming movies you can, Amazon's Video now has four times the number of movies available for watching that Netflix does.
Are they all?
They have four.
Are you talking about Amazon Prime where it's free?
Amazon Prime, it's like $99 a year.
Yeah.
Paid up front, you get the 2-day shipping, the music, and all that. But if you really like streaming movies and say Netflix has fewer and fewer, Amazon is picking up more and more of the movies.
And so, Netflix is about to raise its price a buck, isn't it?
They will in May, yes. But I got to be honest, if you're a Netflix subscriber, $9 a month is a steal.
Yeah.
So, the amount of new content that they have each month, and they're getting up to the point where they're going to be introducing almost every week will be the premiere of one of their original shows here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they'll have 52 new shows a year, but they will have approximately 52 shows every year that are original content. So,
wow.
I mean, for $9 or $10 a month compared to cable at $100 a month,
whatever
you're going to be fine with Netflix.
Whatever happened to those Amazon originals? I know there was a lot of hoopla a couple of years ago when John Goodman was in that sitcom that they made called Alpha House, but I haven't heard of any breakout series from Amazon. Are there any?
There are. I mean, their biggest ones, like they have Mozart in the Jungle that won the Golden Globes. They have Transparent that somehow keeps getting nominated for the comedy category.
Yes.
The Man in High Castle is the Philip K. Dick novel about what if the Nazis and Japan won World War II.
Right.
I mean, that's entertaining, but theirs all seem to come out at a relatively, like, in a small chunk of time. They've got another one called Mad Dogs. It's a remake of a BBC thing about five guys getting together for a weekend in Belize and things going horribly wrong. That's fun and, you know, very binge-worthy. But the other one I want to mention is Hulu has this one called The Path with Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
This is the story of he and his wife, Michelle Monaghan, are in this cult, and he's coming to realize maybe it's not everything it's been promised to be. Wow, I really enjoy this. And Aaron Paul is great.
It's called The Path, P-A-T-H?
The Path, yes.
Okay.
And it's now in its fourth or fifth week because they still release them once a week. So if you're not watching that, if you have Hulu. And
now, do you have to pay for Hulu?
You have to pay for this one. There are some things on Hulu that are free, but this is their original content, so you have to pay. But I think you might be able to see the first episode free because they want you to sign up.
So are they ramping up more and more to not only do originals but also get a lot of movies so that they can compete with Netflix and Amazon?
They're getting movies, but they're moving ahead with a lot of original programming. They did 11/22/63. That was the Stephen King novel about stopping the assassination. That was enjoyable. They're all doing their own. They're all doing original content, it seems, right now. But Amazon is trying to pick up the slack because there are fewer and fewer movies on Netflix.
All right, while we're speaking about Amazon, I've got to ask you a question about this because I've had Amazon Prime for years, mostly because of the two-day delivery and my wife.
Yes.
I mean, with all the stuff that she's getting, you know, to have to pay for the shipping as well would be cost prohibitive for us. But in addition to the two-day shipping, you also get to the Amazon Prime Video, which is how I've been binging on that series Justified that you tipped me to that was on FX. I'm actually up to season 5, and I'm still loving it.
Good.
But they announced this week, Amazon did, that they are going to break out subscriptions for just people who want to get the video, the streaming video, and that'll be $8.99 a month. Now, help me understand this, because I'm not a math genius, but I know that $9 a month times 12 months is $108. But if you buy an annual subscription to Prime, you get not just the streaming video, but also the two-day shipping and a couple of other things. That's $99. Why wouldn't you buy the full thing for a year for $99 instead of paying it on a monthly basis for only part of it for $108?
If I can give you my opinion on this, it's that they're targeting a younger audience who might not have $99 in discretionary income at once. So they're saying, hey, you know what? $9 a month I can commit to, and that way I can cancel if something comes up, and I don't want to pay $100 all at once.
Okay.
That's because there are a lot of... This is the model on the internet. If you subscribe to, let's say, a cloud-based service, you can pay monthly, and it's more than they'll give you a discount if you say, yeah, I'll pay you all for a year up front.
Yeah.
So that's probably what they're doing, because they're giving you flexibility to cancel. They can't count on that revenue, and so it's more difficult for them to deal with the fluctuations.
I'll tell you one thing. Another thing I like about the Amazon Prime service is something that Netflix does not allow you to do, and that is with Amazon Prime, you can download the TV shows or movies for watching later. So if you're going on vacation someplace and you're not going to necessarily have Wi-Fi there, or if you're going to be on an airplane and you're flying somewhere to the West Coast or the East Coast or wherever it is for a couple of hours, you can download that stuff to your iPad or whatever other device you want to use, and you can watch that without having to be in Wi-Fi to stream that stuff. I think that's a terrific thing, and I wonder why Netflix doesn't do that.
That's a good question. I don't know why. And my guess is this is Amazon is right now, I believe, the leader in cloud storage. They provide cloud storage and computing, so it's probably very inexpensive for them to say, okay, you can download this and it'll either... It's easier for them to spend the additional money on bandwidth and storage, is my guess.
In fact, Netflix rents storage space from Amazon, don't they?
Exactly. So I'd be willing to say Amazon says, you know what, it's pretty economical for us to be able to send you this stuff to download because we have the ability to handle that without having to pay more. Yeah. So, you know, they do all of it in-house. I mean, but on the flip side, Netflix, I would be surprised, is probably signing deals with Amazon and Hulu to produce, say, hey, you can use our facilities to produce pilots, because Netflix right now can produce a pilot television for less than anyone. NBC, CBS, all of them. Netflix has the lowest cost. So they're all doing their own thing.
Wow.
Good for us, though.
Yeah, it is. The more content, the better. And I want to. Speaking of content, I want to mention one other series that you recommended a couple of times on this show, and I finally got around to watching it this week, and that is the British kind of mini series called Black Mirror. Which,
oh, how much fun is that?
This is fantastic. If you have Netflix, put this one on your instant watching queue, whatever it's called. Black Mirror was a series of, they did two seasons, three shows in each season, and each episode is self-contained. And they're kind of Twilight Zone-ish, but they are all futuristic, and they all involve people getting into very odd situations. Sometimes technology is part of it. Sometimes other people are getting in each other's way. I don't want to go into too much detail and tell you too much about this. I will tell you, however, that after those two seasons, they made a Christmas special last year that stars John Hamm. And it's kind of supersized because most of the other episodes are 45 minutes, and the Christmas special is an hour and 15 minutes. And holy cow, is it amazingly well made!
It's a lot of fun, and I'm happy to see Amazon pick that up, or Netflix pick that up, because, I really enjoyed it.
Is there any talk of bringing that to the United States and producing it as a series here?
I think Netflix owns the rights to it outright. They own the entire thing, so they may be making more episodes at some point. Yeah.
Because the seven episodes that exist now, they were all made for English television before coming over here, right?
Yeah, exactly. They were made, and I think it's an excellent series, and it's great because you can pick one up, watch it, and then wait a week or 2 weeks or a month, and you're not missing anything because nothing ties in.
Yeah.
But for the first episode especially, you have to have a... it's not for the squeamish.
Oh, no.
I'll just leave it at that.
No, and by the way, I will give you a language warning and a content warning, and particularly on episode number one, there are sexual situations which I will not describe on the radio, but... I think what Colin just said definitely applies. And the last showbiz thing I want to mention is Sunday night on HBO, Silicon Valley and Veep are both back for a new season. So if you're
Game of Thrones, it's a big night for HBO here.
All right. Colin's in Chicago, but back here on Monday to handle the news, and then he's here every Tuesday and Friday. Enjoy the rest of your trip. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Paul. See you then.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.